Hi, I'm Megan Riley, and I am not your normal relationship and sex coach. Remember how he used to look at you? Let's get that back. This isn't going to be about texting the right thing or manipulating him. It's about changing you and you becoming more you. And I am going to be here to help every step of the way. This is the Ignite the Fire podcast. Welcome. Today is a really special guest. Allison Armstrong from understandingmen.com spent quite a while with me talking about men and celebrating men. And this really was meeting a Shiro moment for me. You can hear my gushing a little bit. But a few years ago, someone had recommended one of her books, The Queen's Code, which I have mentioned on this podcast. And I still think every woman should read this book. And it changed my life. From relating to men like misbehaving big hairy women, right? Because men don't have the emotional processing that we do. And that they needed to be put in their place or told or informed of how much better they could do things. But from my perspective. And that's from where I started. And then reading the Queen's Code turned into this world opening, even though I had done decades worth of reading and learning about the masculine feminine energies. Even though I had done all of those things, the Queen's Code and the rest of her books and her courses really did blow my mind. And that men are to be encouraged and celebrated and just how different they are. And rather than be frustrated that we speak a different language, what kind of curiosity could bring that we speak a similar language? And how is it that we could understand them and celebrate them? It's a really special interview to me, and if you like it, please share it. And now, my chat with Allison Armstrong. Allison Armstrong, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Oh my gosh. This is like a meet a hero moment for me. I just am so giddy. And the difference that you have made in my life and the difference that you have made in so many of my girlfriends' lives, so much.
Thank you.
So, the Women's Guide to Living the Orgasmic Life. Tell me about your life.
Oh my gosh. The first thing that I connected with in Orgasmic Life was that we created a theme for the new year, and we call it Your Extreme 2019. And I've created two courses already, right? Not this year. Years ago, 10 years ago, I created Extreme Queen. And a year ago, I created Extreme Freedom. And extreme means farthest from the average or ordinary. So much of my work is about distinguishing what's ordinary, what's normal for a human being. Right? If you're not awake and aware and making an extraordinary choice, what are you going to get? And to me, as much expectation as there is around it, I don't think orgasms are ordinary. So to me, orgasmic life and extreme, those fit right together. And I have been paying attention to what really matters to me, what I call my short list, and what I really, 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 really need. When it comes down to it, I could do without all the rest. But if I have the things I really, really need, then my life will have the short list of the ways I really, really want it to be. And boy, it sure makes things a lot simpler. And I'm not working the way I worked for a couple decades. And I do crazy, crazy fun things. Like 2 weeks ago, I went snowshoeing for the first time.
Oh.
I'd gotten snowshoes 2 years ago, never used them. We had a bunch of snow. I'm like, today's the day. And I watched videos, so I know how to do it. Didn't have anybody to teach me. Put them on, set off, and immediately fell down. And it was just awesome because they say if you can walk, you can snowshoe. And I'm like, okay, well, that's saying something about me. But a half hour later, I was jogging in my snowshoes.
Oh, right on.
Yes, that was orgasmic.
That is such a good ab workout. It is so fun.
I didn't know. You snowshoe?
Oh, yes. I live in the mountains in Colorado, and it's, well, we haven't had as much snow as we have in the past, but So fun.
It's awesome. What I love about living in Colorado after umpteen years, 50 years plus in LA, is my life is really physical. Mm-hmm. You know, it's 10 degrees last week. Didn't care. I was out there for my horsemanship lesson. Snowshoes and playing with my dog and being outside and riding my tractor. And that's just a big part of what's my orgasmic life. And then there's more in the orgasmic department, which is Greg and I have been together for 27 years. And I was just telling him today, it's like, I always wanted a lover. I always wanted one. And to me, what it means to have a lover is that you have the presence. You have the presence of that sexual possibility, mm-hmm. right? And I had to learn how to not use sexuality as a weapon, because I did when I was younger. That's how I would, one of the ways I would emasculate men. And so I wore it like a suit of armor. And to take it off and let it go, right? When I committed to giving up the right to masculate men, I like didn't have access to it. I had to relearn to come to sexuality as a playfulness, as a vulnerability. And it's taken a long time to do that. And I just get the biggest giggle out of how present it is and how much I flirt with Greg and what a kick he gets out of it. Because he just keeps being shocked. He's going to be 69 in a couple months. And I think I'm going to have to say that a lot to him. You're 69. Like for a whole year. I think maybe after I will too. Like maybe I'll start now. You're almost 69. But there's that kind of teasing and play and playfulness. And yeah, it's awesome.
After 27 years.
Better than ever. 27 years.
Huh. I remember sending you the email from the Queen's Code with the pledge, I promise never again emasculate a man.
Did you really promise to never again? Because we'd warn against promising that.
I did. And then I remember catching myself with a man.
Yeah.
Saying something or thinking something or... But then the real awareness for me was in selection.
Hmm.
So I was making the wrong choice. I was making the wrong selection into a man that was willing to be emasculated.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, mind blown. Mm-hmm. What if I made actually the right choice?
And what did you find out?
Well, that makes a hell of a difference.
Mm-hmm. It has everything to do with the 27 years you were just referencing, because like most women, I was a sucker for chemistry. We're taught to be that, which fits in perfectly with our instincts, right? That, I mean, what you're looking for in a mate is someone that you have strong sexual attraction for. And you're supposed to, you know, make you all Twitter-pated was what my mom would say. Are you Twitter-pated? But are you Twitter-pated? Right? And so then we actually, it's not us choosing a man that's right for us. It's our inner cave woman choosing the man that she perceives will be the best protector and provider at a very primal level and has nothing to do with being happy. It's nothing to do with being satisfied or that what you care about is aligned or is harmonious or enhances each other's life.
Mm.
Does that resonate with what you're looking at in right choices?
Very much so. Do I feel like I can be myself?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do I feel safe? Be quirky and weird and sexy and flirtatious and sad and emotional and all those things and not have to worry about being too much. And funny thing is, setting that boundary and also making the promise to never emasculate.
Okay, I have to follow up on that with you, Megan. You know I didn't ask you to promise that, right? Do you know that?
Gosh, I
know. It seems like that. It seems like that, and women change it into that all the time, that they promise to never emasculate again. But this is the thing, emasculation is normal.
Mm.
So I would never set you up to lose. Like to promise to do something that's like virtually impossible to not do because we emasculate our fear and frustration and not having a better way yet, right? There's so much to learn.
Right.
So we just asked you to give up the right to emasculate men, to give up justifying that they deserve to be emasculated because they're jerks and they're stupid and they misbehave and they don't do what they ought to do and they ought to do it and they don't do it right. So they deserve to be taken out. That's what we've always asked for.
Okay, this is such a great point. And that they are not, this one of my favorite parts, they are not big, hairy women.
Yeah. What if men are not hairy women? What if they're not misbehaving hairy women? What if they're not misbehaving hairy women who not know the right thing to do, but are not doing it because they don't feel the right way about you?
Yes.
And if they felt the right way about you, then they'd act the right way towards you. And obviously, they don't feel the right way about you and act the right way towards you because there's something wrong with you. No. Big gong sound.
Big gong sound.
Yeah.
So did Greg come during this work for you?
He showed up in my life 6 months after I started studying men in February of 1991, and less than 2 weeks after I gave up emasculating men. I wasn't asked to give the right to emasculate men. I was asked to just stop doing it. And they felt like I was being asked to cut my own heart out without anesthesia. And I was terrified. Like, oh my gosh, how will I protect myself? And, you know, and then the journey of that's actually told in the Queen's Code. That was me. And the funny thing is we'd been around each other, like literally volunteering in the same office for on and off for 10 years. And I'd never noticed him, and he'd never noticed me, and we had no awareness of each other. And then I laid down my sword and just opened myself up to who are these people really. And boom, he's right there. He fell in love with me at first sight. And I knew it. I knew he loved, not just like gaga, but loved me. I looked in his eyes, I thought, this man loves me. And he did.
Wow.
He just loved me. Yeah. Just lock, stock, and barrel.
How did it unfold? Was it easy?
Well, I had a boyfriend.
Oh.
So I set him up as my coworker's date for our nonprofit's fundraiser on New Year's Eve. And then I broke up with my boyfriend. I kept thinking about him. And then I things weren't going. The guys I was dating, it just wasn't working. And I talked to a man about it. His name was Phil. And I'm like, I don't get it, Phil. Like, so now I broke up with this guy and now I'm dating this guy and we're both passionate about ending hunger and it seems like it ought to work. And he's like, no, that's just a circumstance. I'm like, how can what we're committed to just be a circumstance? Phil was awesome. He said, I don't know. It just is. Right? I couldn't talk him out of it. And I'm like, so what should I do? And he said, well, I think you should pay attention to resonance. I'm like, resonance? And I went and looked it up. Resonance. It means to resound. So it's like an echo or an amplifier. And so who are the people around whom you are more you? There's a bigger you. There's a more expressed you. And who is that for you? Who amplifies you? And so when he said that, I thought, oh, yeah, that Greg guy, the one with the funny hair. I called him up because he had that effect on me. I talked to him I said hello to him when I was on the phone across the table. And I talked to him for 6 minutes, a month later. But I just knew it. I was like, oh, that. And he's not my type. I'd never been with anybody like him. I was with really tall guys. And I mean, I'm only 5'3". But I didn't date under 6 feet. Are you kidding me? I had a boyfriend who was 6'10".
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. 6'10", 6'4", 6'3", 6'2", 6 feet. My first husband, 5'11 and 3/4". I mean, that was a bare minimum. And Greg's about 5'9". And he wasn't my type, which is what, as you know, I really recommend. Your type is going to make you stupid.
Yes.
For both men and women. Just run. And because he wasn't my type, I just paid attention to who he was. And how he was. And I loved him. I just loved how he was. Anyhow, after I found out about resonance, I called him up and I left him a message when I knew he would be at work. I said, I was thinking about you and I was thinking we should be really good friends or something. Call me anytime, no limit. And he called me. He called me right away. And later on, I said, I could tell how you felt about me that first day. Why didn't you ask me out? And he said, well, I just figured someone like you already had some rich guy taking care of her. Had to be. Which is like, oh my gosh. And that's when I found out about encouragement. And that if you don't encourage a man, you never will find out how he feels about you. And the ones who let you know how they feel about you without encouragement, they don't feel the right way about you. And the ones that won't let you know are the ones because how they feel about you is so big, right? Mm-hmm. It's too exposed. And you'd never reveal that if you didn't think you had an excellent chance. So when I left him that message that basically said, you know, green light, he just stomped on the gas. And our first date, he was talking about our grandchildren.
Really?
I'm not kidding. I had a sore throat and I was gargling with salt in this really nice Italian restaurant in the bathroom. But I asked the waiter for hot water and I poured a bunch of salt and took it to the bathroom. And he's like, oh, it'll be a funny story for our grandchildren. And I'm like, what the heck? And I give him credit for being the smarter one of us because I broke up with him a few months later because I was in love with somebody else. But he didn't give up. And then we became friends, which is the best thing that ever happened to us. We became friends. And then I fell in love with him again. And actually really fell in love with him, like in love with him, not just loved him. But on our second date, I told him I loved him. I'm like, could we just get this out of the way? I know you love me and I love you. And I have no idea what that means about the future. But could we just proceed from there? And he's like, yeah. But that big buildup, you know, when are you going to say that? And, oh, I love you. And there's supposed to be so many decisions based on, but I love you. And we're like, no, I love you. That's the ground level. Now what?
This is incredible. So then the man that you were in love with, was he your type?
He was my type in that we were passionate about similar things. And we were working on a project together, and which I get, you know, my work is so much my self-expression. So I'm very likely to fall in love with people I'm working on a project with. And, but Greg, no, it wouldn't last. And he was right. And when we got back together, he expressed, he goes, so how do I know you're not just going to go off with someone else on a project together? And I said, well, work on a project with me. And he just stopped dead in his tracks. We're going up an escalator. There are all these people behind us. And he just stopped. I mean, they could hardly get around him. And he said, and I turned around, looked at him, and he goes, I don't want to work on a project with you. I want to have a home with you.
Wow.
Yes. I almost fell over. It was the best offer I had ever gotten. I want to have a home with you. Like, all of what it meant to have a home was contained in that sentence. I'd never had a home. A home? Like a creation? Like a life together? I'd never had anything like that.
And that's such a great scene, too. On the escalator with people. And you're in your, business attire, right? It's really great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an irresistible offer, and he has fulfilled that over and over and over again.
So you mentioned that you are changing how you've been working. And talked about this on the podcast is working from a masculine focus to not. What has that changed for you? How does that look?
When we're in hunting mode is what we like to call it, which hunting mode is literally a mental and even physiological change that happens when we commit to something. When we commit to a goal, when we commit to a destination, when we commit to a particular result, like we got to get out the door. It's 8 o'clock, we got to hit the door, right? Boom, you're now in hunting mode. And it's really hard on women. We can do it. We can be hot at it. But it's really hard on us because it's literally fueled by testosterone. And men have 15 to 30 times more testosterone than we do. And so they can do that longer. We can do it just as hard as them, but they can do it longer. And all it does is cause them to need to sleep to rebuild testosterone, which they rebuild a lot faster than we do. So we'll end up being really depleted and we won't feel like girls anymore, right? Like sexy, sensuous, joyful, effervescent, radiant, all those things that come with being female end up disappearing or just fading. And we kind of spiritually and emotionally, even physically shrivel. And it even causes a lot of diseases in our bodies because half our testosterone comes from our adrenal glands while we're still fertile. And then it keeps waning. And after menopause, all of our testosterone comes from our adrenal glands. So we end up with a lot of complications of how we tax our adrenal glands. So it's really important, actually, for us health-wise, you know, so physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, to shift to what I would call a gathering mode, which is purposefully staying open to options, open alternatives, open to possibilities, And one of the ways you can access it when you have a goal, like I'm completely mission-driven, is you have to give yourself plenty of time. You can have a goal with plenty of time to accomplish it, like way more, 3 times, 5 times, 10 times as much as you think. And then the word I like to use is putter. You can putter it.
Oh, I love that.
And yeah, some women don't even know what puttering is, which makes me sad. But that thing where you're just taking your sweet time about it. So it's not you go shopping in hunting mode and, okay, I have 6 things on the list. Find this, right? Puttering is more like, oh, I'm going to go to the store. I'm going to go up, down all the aisles. I'm going to check everything. I'm going to see things I never noticed before. La, 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 la. And when you do that, you don't leave the grocery store drained, right? And the same thing at work. If you get to putter it, and people for years have been trying to get me to shorten my appointments. Like if you only had half hour appointments with your staff, you could accomplish a lot more. Yeah, I could. Guaranteed I could accomplish a lot more. Would it be fun? Would I be working with people I love and enjoy? And would we laugh and cry and share our lives with each other and feel so privileged to work with each other and be as fueled by that time together as we would have been drained by just bam, 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 knock it out? It's shifting. It's shifting from a productivity model, like that survival is based on producing. It's shifting from a doing and get her done model to a being. Who are you being? Are you present in your own life? Are you available to other people? Do you have enough time to actually say, so how was your date Saturday night? Or is your son all right? Is he well now? To connect in that way that humanizes the workplace.
Oh.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's just robotic. It's amped up. Even when things are going well, it's just excitement, which is very instinctual. And it's never going to capture people's genius. And that's what I like. I like people's genius. And genius takes space, mental space, which requires a big time space, even emotional space, requires room. If you're going to get the best from people, it requires room, lots and lots of room.
And play? How do you play?
Mm-hmm. Our staff, like, very self-generative. We actually have to pay attention to them not working too much. And every Thursday, we have a call that's a lot about connection. And we do something, we play the conversation game. And every week, somebody else is in charge of the question that everyone answers in the conversation game. So, and we time it, you know, because we just so want to do some stuff, but 3 minutes is a really long time. And it might be anything from last week, it was, what are your favorite holiday traditions and do you have any new ones? To last spring, it was like, what's your favorite thing about the season or what's your favorite season? To what do you love to cook the most? What do you love to eat the most? What's the funniest movie you've ever seen? Like, I mean, we literally play get to know you.
Oh.
And yeah, these are all executives. This is the controller. This is the head of human resources. This is the COO. This is the sales manager, right? This is the head of marketing. And we're playing get to know you. It's awesome. And last week I was like, I have something very important to tell you guys. I've been working on how to distinguish these two things for over 3 years. And I finally, with the help of my friend, figured it out. And they're like, what? And I'm like, the difference between an ass and an asshole. Right? Like, you all know that precision is my number 7 highest value. And when I'm a jerk, it really matters to me to capture exactly what kind of jerk was I. Was I an ass? Or was I an asshole? And for 3 years, I've been wondering what's the difference. And now I know. So that's what I mean by fun.
This sounds light, playful, and loving. I love that this is the model that you have. So not only are you offering the model of how to transform relationships and how to empower relationships, but you also have this model of a business that is female run and open and light and playful and successful.
Yeah. I mean, if you consider 24 years later in what used to be a workshop industry that was decimated by the internet, and yeah, we've survived a recession, a depression, and the virtual elimination of of our industry, like 80% of our industry disappeared because of the internet. And we survived all that.
Nice job.
And, you know, we started out in 1995 with the crazy idea of celebrating men.
Yes. You know, what fabulous creatures they are.
Yes,
and
they are.
So when you started 1991, how was it that you were bringing out the worst in men?
The great thing about 1991 is that's when I found out that maybe men weren't inherently, well, I always thought of them as assholes, that they weren't inherently that. They weren't con artists. They weren't jerks. They weren't assholes. They weren't insensitive. I thought they were that. And I didn't know I had anything to do with it. And for anyone who's read The Queen's Code, that is autobiographical in a grand way, because I am every one of those characters. I was just like Melissa, who would not give up taking out her husband no matter what, no matter what it cost her, the alienation, right? I was that person when I was married to my son's dad. And I was Kimberly, who felt hurt and rejected by someone who didn't adore her. And so I got to find out what they find out in the Queen's Code book or in the Understanding Men course. And it is that not only did I emasculate men and bring out the worst in them with what I did, but we also do it to women and we do it to ourselves.
Yes.
So, yeah. So one of the biggest things is when someone doesn't do what we would have done, we think they did that on purpose. Like they were being purposely inconsiderate, right? And this is a word I was investigating a couple months ago. Like I was thinking Greg did something. I thought, that is so inconsiderate in my head, right? Ah, that was just so inconsiderate. And then the logical part of my brain said, really? Maybe he was just considering something other than what you think he should have been considering. Like what you would have been considering or what you want him to be considering. So what was he actually considering? So now it's back to being myself going, okay, if there was a good reason for why he did that, what was it? Because he's not an inconsiderate person. He's actually very considerate. Oh, so what was he considering? Because, I mean, this is logical, right? We're always considering something. But
yes.
If it's not what somebody else wanted us to consider, then they're pissed.
Yes.
You're supposed to consider me, right? Or you're supposed to consider fill in the blank. And that's one of the things that was so fun about studying men and still is that their reactions are totally different than what I think they are. Can I give you something that happened today?
We'd love that.
One of the things that Greg provides for me is he cleans up after the dogs. He feeds the dogs and he cleans up after the dogs. And clean up after the dog is not, dogs isn't that easy because we have two dogs and they seem to go number two to three times a day. And we have 3.5 acres, but they tend to concentrate it right near the house. So he has this commitment to clean up after the dogs. And I came back from a walk and there was this favorite area of theirs and it was kind of populated and it was supposed to snow today. And you know, if it snows and it melts and, you know, then it's just awful forever. So I was figuring out a way to say it, that, you know, be respectful and considerate and that he has a life. And I came and I said, honey, would you be willing to pick up dog poop today before it snows? His shoulders hunched, you know, and his, like, his back got rigid and his jaw got rigid. And he's like, well, I'll think about it. Like, I don't know if that'll work. And I'm like, I did not know I was asking a terrible question, right? I really didn't know. I'm like, where did you see it? He says to me, I just picked up yesterday. Where did you see it? Right? I didn't know this was going to be, you know, a grilling. And so I pointed to that place out the window and that place out the window. And I'm all tense because he's all, and I'm trying to figure out, okay, was it when I said it? Was it how I said it? Right? It had to be one of those, right? Like I said it the wrong way or I said it at the wrong time, which this is something the women are worried about all the time, right? What's the best way to say it? What's the best time to say it? Is this a good time? Is this a good time? Is it great? Normal, you know, human women thoughts to be thinking, must have been a bad time or a bad way. What did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? And then I caught myself and I was like, could you tell me how I could have done that better? Because I really didn't mean to upset you. And then I just waited, right? Because, you know, put that imaginary duct tape over your mouth. You got to wait and not suggest, was it this? Was it this? Was it this? If you do that, you will never get the real answer. So I just waited. And when he started talking, Megan, it just moves me to tears. He said, I hate that you saw it. It's my job to make sure you never see dog poop. Like, so I pointed out a failure to take care of me. And he's like, yeah, your sister never see it. Like, so it wasn't how I said it. It wasn't when I said it. And he's like, where did you see that? Was because he just never wants me to see it. Like, he wants me to live in a dog poop free life.
Now that is a beautiful life.
How's that for an orgasmic life? Dog poop free. When he takes Arturo and goes out and sets the 800-pound bale for the two horses and the donkey, he's now taken to raking up manure out in the pasture.
Oh, my gosh.
This is the city guy. He didn't want to live in the country. He did this for me. Not only dog poop, he's now extending it to horse poop.
Oh, what a great example of you being able to catch yourself and not launch into anything, not launch into something like, he always does this, or, I mean, you guys have a very different relationship, but the story, you can catch it. And I, such a good example. Can you tell me how I could have done this differently?
An agreement, actually, that Greg and I made a little over a year ago, you know, 25 years in, we call them cold clues. Did you ever play the warmer, colder, hot game?
Yes.
Awesome. Just for people who don't know it, one person's standing there and the other person picks out some place in the environment, right, that is the destination. And then the person who's going to, you know, find it sets off, right? They just, you got to take a risk. You can't just stand there and try to guess where it is. You actually have to take a step. You have to spend energy. And then as you set off, the person who picked the destination, we would call that the receiver, the person who needs something, is saying warmer when you're moving closer to it, right? And colder when your next step took you further away. And warmer, colder, warmer, colder. And what we found is that people have all kinds of problems about warmer and colder clues. One is that people who never want anybody to feel bad, they just always want to make people feel good. So they just want to give warmer clues. What kind of warmer? Well, almost warmer. Never, right? Never say anything negative, they think. And then there are people who only give cold clues. Like, what'd you do that for? That was stupid. That was dumb. Why'd you go there? That's obviously not it. Then there are people who give no clues at all until you arrive on hot by some miracle. Then finally you get feedback. Oh, yay, you finally did it. So, you know, one of the things I like to tease women about is if you think a man in your life is clueless, take it literally. He is clueless. He has less clues than he needs. So give him more clues. Just give more clues. And Greg and I, we discovered that we were both of the warm clue variety, and we never wanted to say anything negative to each other. And so we would go without what we needed for a really long time, looking for a good time, looking for a good way to say it, go without, go without, go without, until we blew our top.
Right.
And this happens a lot because to reveal that you need something, that's exposure, right? Mm-hmm. And that's something very fearful to our instincts. Like, conceal everything that can be used against you. Most people reveal that they need something when their anger at not getting it is bigger than their fear of revealing it. Mm-hmm. Can you see that?
Yes.
We actually use the fear to express something that we haven't had the courage, right, to express even though we were afraid. So then the other part is that there are people who never want to hear cold clues. Don't you dare tell me I didn't do it right. I wasn't perfect the first time. Don't you dare tell me that. I brought you flowers, didn't me? Like, what do you mean you wanted yellow and I brought red? I brought you the damn flowers, right? So we're supposed to settle for whatever was done instead of, wow, really thank you for getting me flowers. I still want yellow. So the flowers are awesome. The stems are a perfect length. They're actually really gorgeous. They smell amazing. And for what I need, what I'm working on, I need yellow. Would you be willing to go back and get yellow? So warm clue, cold clue. So a little over a year ago, Greg and I agreed to welcome cold clues from the other person, to not be crummy about it, to not get all bent out of shape, and even to request them and to warn each other. What I would say to him when I knew I had a cold clue, which I didn't know this morning was a cold clue, right? This poop in the yard, that's a cold clue, right? I didn't know it was that. Normally I would say, can I give you a cold clue? And then he would literally prepare himself for a cold clue. Be like, okay, let me have it. And he would listen to it from what he was committed to instead of like this sneak attack, right? Or drive-by attack, which is what happens a lot. People arrive a lot faster to destination if they ask for warm and cold clues and if we give them to them. Like, what if you stepped and then looked for a clue? Stepped and then looked for a clue. We would arrive at hot so much faster with so much less effort. And that's partnership. That's an aspect of partnership.
You didn't know you were giving a cold clue this morning.
Because I didn't know he was committed to me never seeing poop. Oh. I just found that out. That's something that people need to know, though, about men to be on the lookout for. Women do it, too. But we decide what other people need, and then we provide it without checking with them.
Mm.
And we can waste a lot of energy that way. Because I really don't need to never see poop. You know, I like the absence of that. But I just really need it picked up before a storm is going to melt it into the ground forever.
Yes.
Right? Because we live where gravel is, right? But that's something we do. We just decide somebody needs something. Like I decided Greg needed dinner on the table when he got home from work. I decided that because that's what my stepfather liked. And I thought a good wife would have, you know, dinner on the table. It took years. It was like 6 years into our marriage before I found out that he actually didn't like it, that it put a lot of pressure on him to get home and come inside right away because he knew dinner was on the table. And so he didn't get to have a transition ritual and that he actually didn't want to come straight home from work either. Sometimes he wanted to stop at a bookstore or a car lot. So that was actually the makings of our first deal, was we stopped having dinner on the table when he got home. And instead we had dinner at a particular time and he didn't even have to be there. And he always is there. Yeah, we got to check it out with people. I'm solving this problem. Is it a problem for you? Or I've decided you need this. I've decided you need this and I'm working on it. Right? Greg decided I needed a Jaguar when I had two little kids.
Aww.
What? Like a hole in my head. But just if we notice, how many things do we decide that other people need and then we're spending energy providing it and we're upset that they're not appreciating it?
Mm-hmm.
This is why I say, you know, talking is aftermarket in human beings. Like it was first a human was made and then it got out of the factory and then, oh shoot, we should put that in. And so it's like the leaky sunroof. It just doesn't occur to us to ask. And so that's where my motto all year has been do ask and do tell.
Do ask, do tell. So many times, mostly romantic relationships, but with girlfriends and bosses and employees and all of those, I would be at the end, don't you understand how much I did for you? Their response was something like, I never asked you to do that.
Yes. And yet we expect to be appreciated for the things that we decided to do.
Yes.
And we're really upset when we're not appreciated. And this is something we teach in the Appreciation Equation, which is a teleclass I recorded. If you've sacrificed yourself to provide something for someone else, then the amount of appreciation you need rises exponentially. If you sacrificed your time, your money, your energy to do it, it wasn't just easy to do. You sacrificed something. Now you need way more appreciation. And often the other person, the thing just isn't that important to them. They just can't authentically appreciate you as much as you need.
Awareness of that will resolve and prevent so many fights.
It could. Like, what matters to you? Like, if someone wants to make a New Year's resolution, find out what really matters to the people you care about. Your friends, your family, your husband, your wife, your romantic interest, your boss. What really matters to you? Of all the things I do here, what really matters to you the most? My head of marketing, just a few days ago, we got into it a couple of weeks ago. Baby blew up in the lab. She's like, what did you hire me for anyway? Because I was frustrating her ability to do what she saw as her job, which is rebranding our company, which means rebranding me. I am me. I'm me. Like, hello. But I, you know, finally just told her. This was yesterday. I said, so I want to answer your question now. I want to tell you what I hired you for. And she's like, what? I said, I hired you to be disruptive. That is your job. I knew I was a fat toad in a cave. I needed to be blasted out of there. So I hired you to be disruptive. And she's always apologizing for being disruptive. And now I've gotten so used to it, I tease her. I'm like, you're going to have to do better than that. Asking, telling, what matters to you the most. We did an exercise a few years ago at our company where with everybody that we worked with, we told each other what we counted on each other for. And the difference that it made in our work and our lives to know we could count on them for that. And then we answered the question, what do you wish you could count on me for? That's a powerful ask and tell.
Hmm. You could do that. Families, business, everything.
And it was illuminating. My controller told me things she counted me for that I didn't know. I didn't know that she did. And I didn't know how much it mattered to her.
Wow.
Orgasmic life.
It strangely
starts on with being able to count on people. Crazy, huh?
Yeah, I see hot, being vulnerable with people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rebranding the company. What? We have the Queen's Code and we have Understanding Men. Where else can we find your scrumptiousness? What else is going on?
Wow, this would be like a secret being let out. I tell you this now. So we started out with providing workshops for women to transform their relationships with men because that's where we saw the most pain was being caused. Women were making assumptions about men and attacking men, and men were defending themselves, and it was all going to hell in a handbasket. And so from our point of view, the triage was having women understand men and what was really going on and transform their relationships. And that's all we did for a really long time, even though men kept asking us, could they come to our workshop? Can we come to that workshop? I want to understand myself. I want to come. I want to come. They always kept trying to get into the Understanding Men workshop. And then it took years before we created the Understanding Women workshop. One, because I'd learned so much about women and learned so much about why women were mystifying to men that I actually could now teach men how to understand women. And we realized we weren't empowering our female graduates by not teaching the men in their life how to bring out the best in them instead of bring out the worst. Because men bring out the worst in women, just as we bring out the worst in men. And so That's when we started creating our curriculum for men. So we had workshops for men and workshops for women. And so we had Understanding Women. And then women could come to the workshop because otherwise men wouldn't believe me. They'd think I was crazy. And what? The pillows talk to you? What are you talking? What? Yeah, they talk to me. They say, I'm crooked. Can't you hear them? And right? So I needed women to validate, just like we have man panels to validate what I learned about men. I just had women just come with their men. And then I was stunned that they didn't know what I was teaching the men about them, that they didn't know it about themselves. That was a big shocker, how much women do not know why we do what we do. So then, but it's been divided. There's been this literally a wall up between. This is our programs for women. These are our programs for men. And what we're doing at the beginning of 2019, our extreme 2019, is the walls are coming down. We're encouraging, because we now have ample evidence for the difference it makes, we're encouraging men and women to start with understanding men and women. And men have reported back to us that them doing the Understanding Men online course, where I'm predominantly teaching women about men, they now understand women better. They never understood why women didn't understand them. Men never understood why women didn't understand them. And after that course, now everything that women do, like that hurts them, crushes them, emasculates them, now they understand why women do it. And they have compassion, which is stunning. And because they can see where it's coming from, they actually don't have to be emasculated by it. So that's what's happening. And Understanding Women, a woman could not do that course until she did Understanding Men. Uh-huh. And so for years, women are like, I don't want to understand men. I want to understand myself. Sorry. Well, as of the 30th of December, women will be able to start at Understanding Women. And everything about how can we flip from being, depending on if we're in hunting mode or gathering mode, what has us experience being safe, what has us be appreciated, what has us being supported, what has us want to have sex. Everything is different depending on what mode we're in. And we can change in an instant. And this is why men fail so often, because they're like, it worked 2 minutes ago. It worked yesterday. Why isn't it working now? And we teach all the signs. These are the signs. If you're getting these signs, treat her like this. listen to her like this, talk to her like this, look at her like this, touch her like this, don't touch her at all, right? If she's giving up these signs, then listen this way, speak this way. And they're not rules. They're these worlds that open up to the men. And they get so excited because they have tools and they work really well. And now they don't get their head bit off so often. That's what's happening. And we're continuing. Like, men get to watch the sex and intimacy course. Men get to participate in the love and commitment course. They need the information just as much as women do. And we're just taking the walls down. When you starting the beginning of the year, when you come to our website, it won't say for men and for women. It'll just be for everybody.
Oh,
so that's a big part. Yeah, a big part. I'm stoked about it. And it's experimental because women watching, understanding women who haven't figured out how much they bring out the worst in men, they may think the men in that course are ridiculous for not already knowing this. They may think that. It's a big risk. It might be temporary. You might be like, nope, going back to you got to do the other course first. But I hope not. Because the information in both courses is incredibly valuable to both genders, all genders, mixed up genders, no gender. I mean, it's about being human.
Oh, this is so delicious. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited.
Thank you.
In 24 years, where you started out celebrating men, and here you go. You know, men having this information, women having this information, not walking around beating our heads against a wall, wondering, why is this not working?
Yeah.
What difference this will make for the next generation?
Oh, golly, I hope so, since it applies to small men and small women just as much. It's instantly there, and then it just at puberty, just everything we see in men and women shows up in young men and young women. Probably one of the favoritest things I've gotten to do in all these years is transform the way women relate to their sons and what it's like to be their sons, to be celebrated, to be honored, to be appreciated, to be seen. Oh, you're focused on that. I'll come back later. Oh my gosh. A mom who respects a young man's focus instead of, I need this now. Why haven't we already done it? Right.
Right.
Oh, okay. If you could start transitioning to dinner, we're going to be having dinner in 10 minutes. Okay?
Yes. This is what's exciting. You know, when we first started with Me Too, at first I thought, well, let's prepare the next generation for when we misunderstand each other, for when assault happens, for when, you know, those kinds of things happen. And over the last year, and I love that you are launching this right now, what it seems is it doesn't have to be for the next generation.
Yeah. It's not too late.
Yes.
You and I were talking about our mission before we started. That's one of the reasons we changed our mission, because it used to say we're dedicated to providing this to all future generations. And these young women who work for us said, what about our generation? What do you mean future generations? Are you writing this off? It's like, oh, sorry. And yeah, Me Too. I did a whole webinar on Me Too that we've never released to the public, but it really has to do with what it means to be human and our relationship to power.
We need that.
Well, if you just ask Leslie,
yes,
for access to it, then I can give it to you. We never released it publicly on purpose, but we do make it available to people who we believe will use the information well. Be happy to give it to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You know, I had a few things we wanted to talk about, and this was so much better and more delicious and fabulous.
Thank you
for your time.
You're welcome. It was great for me too. Thanks for letting me get to be really just personal. I appreciate that.
A heartful moment for heroin meeting. Yes, you're so awesome.
Thank you. Thanks, Megan.
Thank you for listening. I hope that you enjoyed it and maybe even giggled a little bit at my gushing over Alison Armstrong. So if you like the episode, go ahead and binge to every single episode that there is, and please subscribe.